Chapter 11. The Completed Character. The Golden Ideal of Character Creation. First, conceive of a compelling, complex nature, rich in human promise, but, like anyone with life left to live, incomplete. Then, as she makes and takes pressure-filled decisions and actions over the course of the story, progressively realize her unfulfilled potential. Finally, at story's climax, send her through an experience, both emotionally and mentally, that propels her to the absolute limits of her humanity. Nothing left undiscovered, nothing left unexplored, nothing left unused, nothing left unfelt, nothing left unexpressed. Everything latent, fulfilled. Everything actable, performed. Everything knowable, revealed. Everything latent, expressed. Every emotion lived in full. The character is complete. To achieve this ideal, role design takes four major steps: preparation, revelation, change, completion. Four major steps of character design. 1. Preparation. Principle: at the inciting incident, major characters are incomplete. As a story begins, its major characters, like most people, have never experienced their mental, emotional, and moral possibilities to their absolute limits. Their feelings and thoughts have known a certain depth, but never the fullest range of passion and insight, because life has never asked it of them. They are incomplete, but unaware of it. The story that lies ahead will bring them experiences they've never known before and affect them in ways they cannot see coming. Only the author knows what's nascent within them and what the true range of experience may be. In my definition, character need is a void in a role's humanity, unthought intelligence, underfelt emotion, unused talent, underlived life. Need is something half done that needs to be finished, something missing that yearns to be found. Therefore, as a complex character enters your story, she is a work in progress. To achieve the golden ideal, you must put your character through encounters that will take her mentally and emotionally into the deepest depths, the farthest stretches of her humanity. But what is her potential? Before your protagonist enters your story, take her measure. What is her IQ and EQ? Her willpower, her imagination, the depth of her empathy, the height of her courage. Give thought to how far life has taken her and how much deeper the future might carry her. Next, ask this key question. What event would send my protagonist along a spine of action that ends in a climax of such emotional power and mind-expanding insight that she experiences her humanity at its supreme limit and thus, for better or worse, completes herself? The answer, once you find it, will become your story's inciting incident. The choice of an inciting incident perfectly tuned to the protagonist's need makes fine writing possible. 4 examples. At the inciting incident of The Leftovers, the long-form series by Damon Lindelof and Tom Perrotta, 2% of the world's population instantly disappears. With that, co-protagonists Kevin Garvey, played by Justin Theroux, and Nora Durst, played by Carrie Coon, suddenly find life meaningless. At the inciting incident of Machinelle, a play by Sophie Treadwell, Helen, submitting to parental and social pressure, marries a man who disgusts her, thinking that this will give her a secure life. At the inciting incident of Fight Club, a novel by Chuck Palahniuk, the protagonist, known only in the first-person voice of the narrator, moves in with Tyler Durden, and together they build a fight club. At the inciting incident of Mrs. Sofel, a film by Ron Neiswiner, Kate Sofel, played by Diane Keaton, a prison warden's wife, decides to save the soul of a condemned prisoner. 2. Revelation. Principle. A story's dynamic of events reveals true character in contrast with, or contradiction to, characterization. The vast majority of all genres reveal an inner truth of their characters, but do not arc them. As Samuel Butler put it, it's one against legion when a creature tries to differ from his own past selves. Deep character change is difficult and exceptional. 6 genres, however, do arc their protagonists over the course of the telling, and these will be laid out in Chapter 14. The genres of action-adventure, war, horror, fantasy and crime, as well as most dramas and comedies about physical, political, domestic, and romantic struggles, submerge a core self beneath layers of believable yet intriguing characterization. They then reveal this inner nature, exposing but never changing the character's psychology and morality. What changes is the reader's audience's insight. The most powerful revelations occur when events put a character at maximum risk. The choice, for example, between life and death is easily made, and any insight that follows relatively shallow. But a choice between 2 deaths, one by long, painful disease, the other by quick suicide, strips away a character's public and personal personae, revealing the core self. By the same token, if she stands to lose a thing of great value in order to gain another thing of equal value, her choice expresses who she is. In Martin McDonagh's play, The Beauty Queen of Lenane, Maureen Folan, a 40-year-old former inmate of an insane asylum, seems like a submissive, intimidated, overgrown child until she murders her mother, puts on her mother's clothes, and takes her mother's place in the living room rocking chair. In Maureen's schizophrenic mind, she has always been her mother. Playing her daughter was just a temporary guise. In J.D. Salinger's novel, The Catcher in the Rye, the cynical, lonely Holden Caulfield suffers confusion about his sexuality and longing for idealized romance. He feels alienated from people and alienates others in return. His attitudes vary, but his core self never fundamentally alters from first page to last. In Woody Allen's Annie Hall, Elvie Singer's boyhood insecurities poisoned his adulthood. He so hates the truth, he chooses fantasy over reality. Happiness so sours him, he chooses misery over joy. His obsession with himself renders him incapable of love. Over time, his choices expose a twisted, unchanging neurotic lurking under his wit and charm. To sum up, as outer circumstances in a protagonist's life undergo change, her choices and actions slowly uncover her core self. With each word and gesture, her characterization peels away, leaving her true self standing naked, as it were, at climax. Although the true character, once revealed, did not evolve, the reader's or the audience's perceptions did, growing deeper and deeper in understanding. Once again, this archetypal pattern of a revealed but unchanged character underlies the vast majority of major characters in the vast majority of all stories ever told. Test this principle in your own work by asking two simple questions of primary characters. Who do we think she is at the beginning of the story? Who do we know she is by the story's climax? Your answers should reveal a change of insight in the reader audience. 3. Change. Principle: character change puts dimension into action. An age-old puzzle known as the Ship of Theseus paradox asks, if a ship is repaired slowly over time, so that eventually every part is replaced, is it still the same ship, deserving the same name? If, on the other hand, the ship were lost at sea, but another were remade to its exact specifications, does it need a new name, or is it essentially the same? In both cases, not a single board, cleat, or sail is left from the original. Nonetheless, the two ships prompt opposite conclusions. Most people feel that the slowly repaired craft stays the same and should keep its name, but the replacement vessel is new and needs a rechristening. This archaic puzzle, of course, is not about nautical nomenclature. It's a metaphor for human change. Substitute identity for ship, and it becomes a parable that raises questions of who am I? Who was I? Who will I be? Will fate preserve me or remake me? Like a ship navigating unknown waters, a complex character sails through random, unexpected, life-battering events that may or may not alter her nature. Some writers react to character change the same way the public treats the Theseus paradox. Gradual revisions do not change their character's core identity, while the shock and scar of an explosive event mutates it. Other writers do the opposite. Powerful events never dent their character, although time may slowly evolve her. As we saw in Chapter 3, every author needs a personal theory of human nature so she can answer the question, does damage to my character's life change or not change her core identity? Which do you believe? Is a character, like the Ship of Theseus, becoming a more concentrated, although essentially unchanged self over time? Or is she transforming into a wholly different self that her past self wouldn't recognize? In other words, Does your character's every thought evolve her into a minutely different self than she was the moment before? Does every hour she spends with others gradually make her more like them? Or do you believe that these shifts are trivial, and that at heart, your character always stays who she is? The theory of perpetual identity. The theory of perpetual identity holds that a child at birth is a clean slate and could become almost anyone. But as life inscribes her with experience, she develops unique patterns of action-reaction that hold her mind together and create her persistent identity. Shifts in characterization take place around this stable center. Once the pattern is set, her choices and actions in the story's future events make her more and more specific, more and more herself. In Middlemarch, George Eliot expressed her belief in perpetual identity with this often quoted image. Quote, "Even while we rave on the heights, we behold the wide plain where our persistent self pauses and awaits us." Unquote. In tellings about a protagonist's search for identity, characters such as Jimmy Porter in John Osborne's play Look Back in Anger, and James McBride in his memoir The Color of Water, recognize their outer changes, but at the same time feel that their past belongs to them, and, in a sense, is them. In fact, the act of retrospection itself implies a constant identity. If a character's core self didn't persist through time, it couldn't exist in the present to look back at its past. Many writers believe that the core self secures itself against a steady succession of changes in its outer life. Bodily changes, personal and social changes in relationships, career moves, housing moves, and the like. Constantly changing circumstances do not change its essence, least of all its moral nature. For example, Alex, played by Malcolm McDowell, the protagonist of Stanley Kubrick's A Clockwork Orange, a film adaptation of Anthony Burgess's novel, both inflicts and suffers hideous pain, but stays steadfast, even happily the same. The theory of the changing identity. Animals obey instincts. Humans analyze theirs. Wolves never worry about what it means to be a wolf. They just wolf. But the self-aware human mind frets over its urges and intuitions, charts the push and pull of instinct and reason, all in an effort to become a better, or at least different, version of itself. For this reason, many writers believe that change is not only possible, but essential. Change, when it occurs, arcs along a character's defining dimension. In John Milton's epic Paradise Lost, for example, the protagonist's core contradiction is good-evil. The story traces a positive-to-negative arc as Lucifer, angel of light, good, compelled by pride, gathers an army of like-minded angels and tries to overthrow God. After 3 days of war, he's hurled out of heaven and down to hell, where he takes the name Satan, angel of darkness, evil. Other examples? The dimension kindness-cruelty arcs from positive to negative in Chuck Tatum, played by Kirk Douglas, in Billy Wilder's Ace in the Hole, But in the reverse direction, in Amir, in The Kite Runner by Khalid Hosseini, generosity, greed, swings from negative to positive in Ebenezer Scrooge, in Charles Dickens's novella, A Christmas Carol. But in the reverse, for Bobby Axelrod, played by Damian Lewis, in the Showtime series, Billions. Multiple dimensions could crisscross with irony. In Aravind Adiga's novel, The White Tiger, Balram Hawaii goes from law-abiding citizen to criminal, positive to negative, while he also changes from impoverished laborer to a corporate executive, negative to positive. The value charge in a changing self can pivot in one of two directions, negative or positive. Positive arcs. Definition. A positive arc, as the name implies, ends on a positive charge. It could open with a character in either a positive or negative state, and then move in alternating positive-negative cycles that increase their impact to a climax that fulfills the character's desire. A positive arc, therefore, often begins when a character senses a negative state within herself. At first, she resists change, but revelations of yet more bitter truths eventually overcome her reluctance until she finally reaches the top of a moral slope. Examples? In John Patrick Shanley's play, Doubt, a Parable, Sister Aloysius arcs from an autocrat blinded by self-righteousness, arrogance, to a woman shamed by doubt, humility. In Danny Rubin's screenplay for Groundhog Day, Phil Connors, played by Bill Murray, evolves from an immature, self-absorbed egoist incapable of love, selfishness, to a mature, compassionate, heartfelt lover, selflessness. In J.M. Coetzee's novel, Disgrace, David Lurie, a manipulative seducer and pretentious intellectual, self-deception, slowly deconstructs his life and finally accepts his place in a world beyond his control, self-awareness. Here from the series and films Sex in the City are four positive arcs that take characters from incomplete to complete. Carrie Bradshaw. Carrie, played by Sarah Jessica Parker, is a pop journalist who writes about sexual and romantic relationships in New York City. Despite her intelligent study and careful observations of these issues, her emotions dominate her choices and behaviors. Carrie opens the series self-conscious and insecure. Over the course of six seasons and two films, she arcs to self-possessed and secure. At the beginning of the series, she seeks acceptance and reassurance from her friends and the men in her life, particularly Mr. Big, played by Chris North. Her neuroses become obsessions, such as having a key to her lover's apartment and equal space in his bathroom cabinet. She's aware of her behavior and blames it on her tendency to get carried away. "Just tell me I'm the one," she begs Big at the end of season one. She's flawed, but empathetic, thanks to her self-deprecating humor. She searches for a true love and commitment, but doubts that she's the marriage and family type. Mr. Big, who she meets in the first episode of the series, is her first and only great love. Despite her many other affairs, she feels that Big is her soulmate. At the end of the sixth and last season. Big announces that he's coming back to New York City from California to be with Carrie. At the climax of the first film, they marry. Question: has she arced to self-possession on her own, or has marriage done it for her? Samantha Jones. The hypersexual Samantha, played by Kim Cattrall, is the oldest of the four friends and owns her own PR firm. As a self-proclaimed trisexual, meaning she'll try anything once, most of Samantha's storylines revolve around her sexual escapades. Passion is her passion, with or without romantic ritual. But she never loves anyone other than herself. She seems incapable of love, and so the series arcs her through a redemption plot. Although sexually narcissistic, amongst her friends, Samantha is the most loyal and the least judgmental. She engages in a few serious relationships, one of them lesbian, but rarely dates anyone more than once or twice. In season 6, however, two things happen. She gets involved with Smith, played by Jason Lewis, and is diagnosed with breast cancer. She faces her cancer with great courage and wit. No matter how ugly the therapy, Smith stands by her through the worst of times. She loves him for it. In the first film, set 4 years later, she lives with him in L.A. and does her best to stay in a committed relationship. But, despite her tender feelings for Smith, she finds herself madly attracted to her hypersexual neighbor. She finally questions her feelings and concludes that she loves herself more than Smith. They break up. In the second film, she's back to her old self having sex on the hood of a guy's Mercedes. Samantha undergoes a double arc: loveless sexual obsession, her true self, to committed sexless love, her false self, back to loveless sexual obsession, her truest self. Charlotte York. Charlotte, played by Kristen Davis, is a Connecticut blue blood, prom queen, cheerleader, track star, teen model, equestrian, Smith College grad, art dealer, aka a wasp. She undergoes an education plot from naive to worldly. She's blindly romantic, always searching for her knight in shining armor. The least cynical of her friends, she believes love conquers all. She disdains the libertine antics of her friends, convinced that dating has rules. Her friends are often envious, even in awe of Charlotte's overall optimism about love. Yet she occasionally surprises them with dirty talk and her love of oral sex. Her belief in romance leads her to decide not to have sex with her fiancé until their honeymoon, only to discover that her perfect husband is in fact impotent. She eventually divorces him due to his twisted relationship with his mother. Although Charlotte is initially put off by her divorce attorney's constant sweating, messy eating, bald head, and hairy body, she sleeps with him when he confesses his intense attraction to her. Harry, played by Evan Handler, gives her the best sex of her life. She tries to keep their relationship strictly sexual, but because of Harry's deep caring, she finds herself falling in love. Initially, she tries to reform him to fit more closely with her image of the ideal man. But when she realizes how much pain she's causing him, she accepts Harry the way he is. In fact, she converts to Judaism because of Harry's avowal only to marry a Jewish woman. Only when Charlotte realizes that she must put aside her romantic ideals and accept Harry on his own terms does she find a love that fulfills her romantic ideals. The man who is the antithesis of the perfect man becomes her ideal mate. She undergoes an arc from a real-life disaster with Mr. Right to ideal love with Mr. Wrong. Miranda Hobbs. Miranda, played by Cynthia Nixon, a Wall Street lawyer, overvalues work and undervalues men. She arcs through a double education plot, changing her attitudes toward both. In the early seasons, she treats men with distrust and resentment, finding them immature and unrealistically romantic. Then Miranda meets Steve, played by David Eigenberg, a bartender. What starts as a one-night stand grows into sharing an apartment. Economic differences cause arguments, so they separate but keep a friendly sexual relationship. When Steve loses a testicle to cancer, Miranda sleeps with him to convince him that women will still find him attractive whether he has one ball or two. As a result, she gets pregnant, but decides against abortion. Pregnancy softens her character, and she tells Steve that she'll take full responsibility, raise the child, and let him visit the boy if he likes. Motherhood stresses this workaholic, but she finds ways to balance career and a child. She and Steve try to raise their son as platonic partners. At the boy's first birthday party, Miranda blurts out her love for Steve, and to her delight, Steve declares that she's the one. They marry. In the second film, Miranda is so overworked that she misses her son's school activities. What's worse, her misogynistic boss disrespects her. Steve convinces her to quit and find a fulfilling job at a firm where she's admired and appreciated. Miranda arcs from imbalance to balance in both work and love. Negative arcs. A negative arc could begin with a character in either a positive or negative state, then alternate positive-negative cycles that deepen in impact until ending in tragedy. This arc, of course, shapes the lives and deaths of Shakespeare's greatest dramatic characters, Antony and Cleopatra, Macbeth and Lady Macbeth, Brutus and Cassius, Coriolanus, Richard III, Hamlet, Othello, King Lear, all of whom complete themselves in a tragic climax. Negative arcs often begin with a character living in youthful fantasies or naivete. Reality punctuates her dreams, but she insists on her beliefs until she descends into a pain-filled, irreversible truth. Ibsen's Hedda Gabler, Strindberg's Miss Julie, along with the protagonists of almost every play by Tennessee Williams. A good to evil arc could start with a sweet little girl and end with a serial killer. For example, The Bad Seed, a play by Maxwell Anderson. Or begin with a hard-working white-collar engineer and end in a violent psychic breakdown. Falling Down, a film by Joel Schumacher. Or open with an idealist and arc him into a mass murderer. Ostland, a novel by David Thomas. In Thomas Hardy's novel, Jude the Obscure, Jude Foley, a manual laborer, homeschools himself in classical Greek and Latin in hopes of becoming a university scholar. Fantasy. But lower class deprivations and upper class bigotries quash his dream. He spends his entire working life cutting stone until he dies in bitter poverty. Reality. The backstory of George Lucas's Star Wars saga mirrors Lucifer's fall. In it, a Jedi Knight, Anakin Skywalker, good, seeking power over life and death in hope of saving the woman he loves, moves from the realm of light to the infamous dark side. Burnt and dismembered in battle, he joins the Empire and takes the name Darth Vader, evil. In Patrick Marber's play, Closer, Dan, Anna, Larry, and Alice search for loving, intimate relationships, meaningful. All four cycle through years of meeting, making love, partnering up, and breaking up, finally ending in loneliness and discontent, meaningless. Character arcs, positive or negative, seldom trace a smooth line, but more likely move in dynamic zigzags. If a story's values never change their charge, the telling freezes into a portrait. Imagine if everything that happens runs positive, 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 finally leaving the cast beaming with delight. Or if nothing but grim scenes surge further and further downhill until they crush the characters at the bottom. Repetition is the writer's mortal enemy. Change from a character's point of view. When your character looks back on her life, who does she see? Herself or someone else? Is she still the same? Better? Worse? Unrecognizable? Does she hate, like, or ignore who she was, who she is, who she will be? Attitudes toward oneself span from narcissism to self-love, to self-respect, to self-indifference, to self-criticism, to self-hate, to thoughts of suicide. Two contradictory visions bracket this spectrum. Life as fate and life as destiny. Life as fate. If your character looks backward, rarely forward, she may feel trapped in a fate not her own. She may never satisfy her own desires, only the demands of others. She feels lost and out of contact with her true self, an identity hidden somewhere in her subconscious. As this child of fate surveys her past, does she feel that instead of evolving, she has turned into someone she doesn't know? Do her old beliefs, values, and goals seem lost? Do past desires and behaviors baffle her? Does she wonder how she could have done the things she once did? Do her past deeds seem alien, if not incomprehensible? Does change seem so great that she can't imagine how she could have been who she was? In other words, is she self-alienated? Life as destiny. If your character looks forward, rarely backward, she lives life on her own terms, freely choosing her own path. She never doubts that she is her core self. Destiny implies a destination, and hers awaits in the future, drawing her toward fulfillment. As this child of destiny progresses into adulthood, Does she identify with her changed self? As her childhood anger softens into midlife contentment, as her dedication to career gradually drains away, as arthritis slowly ages her, does she look back and feel that although she's evolved physically and emotionally, at heart, she's essentially the same? Has her original psychological makeup evolved naturally? Do her past desires influence present actions? In other words, is she self-empathetic? How does your character see herself over time? For some characters, change brings clarity. In Frank Darabont's screenplay for The Shawshank Redemption, Red, played by Morgan Freeman, sees his past without distortion or rationalization and wishes he could go back in time to his young self who committed a terrible crime and shake sense into him. For some characters, change brings confusion. In D.H. Lawrence's novel, The Rainbow, Ursula Bagwin reviews her life in bewilderment. Every phase seems so different, yet always herself. Quote, but what did it mean, Ursula Bagwin? She did not know what she was, only she was full of rejection, of refusal. Always, always she was spitting out of her mouth the ash and grit of disillusion, of falsity, unquote. For some characters, change brings anger. In Samuel Beckett's play, Crap's Last Tape, Crap, at age 69, listens to recordings he made over the decades. In his youth, he believed in a lifelong identity. No more. When he listens to his past voices, he knows they were once him, but he sneers at them all and emphasizes with none. Like a snake leaving his skin behind, year after year he sloughs off his earlier selves until he's left with a bitter old man, the final crap. Whether change happens fast or slow, inward or outward, by chance or by will, all characters interpret change idiosyncratically. Some accept, some deny. Some take no notice. In general, however, change elicits four possible reactions. 1. A character may feel that change is merely cosmetic, and she'll be back to her old self soon. 2. She may feel transformed into a better self. 3. She may view the past as the grave of the better woman she once was and left behind. 4. She may discover her true self, the self she repressed since childhood. Now, for better or worse, she can finally live who she really is. Change from an author's POV. What is your personal take on character change? How do your characters react to it? Some writers believe in the permanence of identity, others in deep change. Some reveal true character, others keep it a mystery. Some arc characters, others do not. In all cases, however, how an author connects a character to her past shapes the course of her identity. A healthy past, for example, strengthens the link between past and present and keeps identity whole. A traumatic past weakens and fragments it. Once damaged by abuse, the core self holds onto its sanity by clinging to its memories, struggling to keep them alive and true. In this case, the past may inflict itself on a character with various results. Here are four possibilities. 1. Obsession. A trauma constantly re-enters the mind with the sharp-edged impact of its original experience, unshaded and unblunted by time. PTSD, for example. Because a psychological scar never forms, each remembrance tears open the same wound. 2. Repression. The conscious mind buries a painful memory in the subconscious where it festers, fueling neuroses, warping identity. 3. Fantasy. If a trauma refuses to fade, the mind copes with its pain by rewriting the past into alternative events it never lived but fantasizes it did. 4. Balance. The mind courageously faces the truth with neither excess nor distortion. Does the cause and timing of change alter your character's sense of self? If change comes suddenly, a kitchen accident scalds her face and hands, would physical disfigurement shred her identity? If change comes slowly, by deliberate choice, each day she poisons her husband just enough to make him sick as punishment for an insult, but over time she slowly decides he doesn't deserve to live. Is she exposed for who she always was, or does a changed self replace the old? Fine authors develop unique, idiosyncratic approaches to character arcs. Change from the reader's, audience's POV. At a story's beginning, as exposition piles up, readers and audiences absorb the surfaces, discovering who the characters seem to be. Twin curiosities about character revelation and change hold interest to the last moments. Who are these characters at heart? Who might they become? Understanding the necessity to pace and build a reader's or an audience's interest, the writer must time a story's events to first conceal, then reveal the next change, and ultimately complete a complex character. 4. Completion. Principle. The finest works of story art fulfill the protagonist's need and desire at the limits of human experience. The terms need and desire may seem synonymous, but in my view, they name two very different aspects of character seen from two very different points of view. Desire. A character's persistent purpose, her unreached goal. Throughout a story's telling, as the protagonist struggles to put her life back into balance, she pursues her object of desire as far as her emotional and mental powers can reach. Need. An empty inner space, a potential that craves realization. At the inciting incident, the writer recognizes an incompleteness in her protagonist. She's raw material for a superb character, but lacking the unique experience that would fulfill her unique potential. She, therefore, needs to complete her humanity. At the climax, the events she creates do just that. The story's final turning points put the protagonist's emotional and mental capacities under enormous pressure. With her last actions, she experiences herself to the limit of her capacities as her author explores and expresses her core self at her greatest emotional and mental depths. She thus becomes a completed character. Nothing left to reveal, nothing left to change. Characters are never aware of their need. Only the author sees it. Only their author knows what's latent in her character. Only the author can imagine her character in her most complete state. Characters who do not change, action heroes, cartoon figures, comic roles, have no need. They are unchanging, yet fascinating. In Curb Your Enthusiasm, Larry David is the same obsessive at the beginning of each season as he is at the end. Episode after episode, he blindly pursues his slavish mania for propriety, acting out his rigid, hysterically funny self. This same pattern carries over sequel after sequel for superheroes in Marvel's cinematic universe. In character-driven genres, which we'll see in Chapter 14, stories open with their principal characters, especially protagonists, internally incomplete. Their lives to date have never called on them to use their capacities, intelligence, morality, talent, willpower, emotional forces such as love and hate, even courage and cunning, to their limit. But during the story's clashes, the characters' actions and reactions do that work. At climax, their instinctive need to complete their humanity propels them to the end of the line, to the limit of human experience. Here's some examples of completed characters. In Euripides' play Medea, Princess Medea discovers that Jason, her lover and father of their two boys, has abandoned her for another woman. Medea not only poisons the other woman and the other woman's father, but, to punish Jason, murders their children as well. She escapes with her son's bodies and buries them in hiding so Jason can never say a prayer over their graves. With this revenge, Medea propels herself to a stunning extreme. At the climax of Sophocles' Oedipus Rex, Oedipus' discovery that he has unwittingly murdered his father and married his mother so horrifies him that, raging with grief, he gouges out his eyes. This bolt of emotion numbs all thought, leaving Oedipus in shock and unfinished. 23 years later, however, Sophocles, at age 90, completed his character. In Oedipus at Colonus, Oedipus thinks to the heart of his complicity and realizes that his pulsing pride and lack of self-awareness shaped his fate. In short, he should have known better. Once he accepts his guilt, he completes himself and dies in peace. In Kim Ki-duk's Spring, Summer, Fall, Winter, and Spring, an apprentice Buddhist monk evolves from a cruel child to a lustful teenager to a wife-murdering felon to a repentant convict to a Buddhist master, an arc that ends in an inner gravity of genuine change, life-worn wisdom, and completion of self. In The Sea, the Sea, a novel by Iris Murdoch, Charles Arrowby, a playwright and director, pursues his lifelong obsession with romance, never understanding that his first, true, and only love is, and always has been, himself. He finally exhausts his limited humanity, trapped in a cul-de-sac of self-deception, completely blind to himself. In Network, by Patty Chayefsky, adapted for the stage by Lee Hall, TV anchorman Howard Beale, played on screen by Peter Finch and on stage by Bryan Cranston, makes headline news by declaring that modern life is bullshit. Beale's primetime rants bring higher and higher ratings as he spirals deeper and deeper into insanity. Eventually, his message about meaninglessness becomes meaningless. As his ratings fall, the network has him assassinated on camera. He dies, but not until all of his dimensions have been exposed and exhausted. When is Michael Corleone completed? At the end of Godfather Part 2? Some think yes, I think not. Over the first two films, Michael makes others suffer, but he doesn't burn in real hell until The Godfather Part 3 completes him. In the finale of The Leftovers, the love story between Nora and Kevin climaxes quietly as they hold hands over a kitchen table. For three seasons, Nora's cynicism keeps her from believing in Kevin. Kevin's intimacy aversion keeps him from believing he deserves Nora. In between their personal episodes, Nora travels sideways to a parallel universe in search of her lost family, while Kevin dies and rises from the dead again and again. Once they realize that the only way to make sense of the senseless is to believe in their love, they reach completion. Completing a character. To sum up, for some characters, a fierce longing to make their mark on the world, an unquenchable thirst to find purpose, drives them to complete themselves. For others, an inner fear of fragmentation, or a fervent curiosity about their natures, propels them. In both cases, the uncompleted construct themselves inwardly by testing themselves outwardly. They take grave risks to pursue something they value supremely, but cannot fully control, even when they reach it. The vast majority of characters, however, rarely question how deeply they've gone into life, how much wider they might go, if they'll ever experience themselves to the fullest. Instead, the writer does that for them by taking key measurements and asking key questions. Writing to fulfill a character's need to complete begins with the recognition that we are all born with excess capacity, with far more thought and feeling than life will ever demand, with powers we will never use. So study your character in those days just before the story begins and ask, given my character at this point in her life, given the small percentage of mental and emotional aptitude she's used thus far, and given the depths and breadths she might someday touch, what does her humanity lack? With that answer in hand, then ask, what does she need to complete herself? What specific event, should it happen to her, would propel her toward fulfillment of her promise? That turning point becomes your story's inciting incident. After that, ask, what events would carry her to the limits of her greatest thoughts, her deepest being? What pressures, conflicts, choices, actions, and reactions will take her humanity to its fullest? These answers become the story you tell. Once characters reach completion, they often reflect on the ironies that scarred yet fulfilled their humanity. We'll close with their thoughts. Tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow creeps in this petty pace from day to day to the last syllable of recorded time. Macbeth and the Tragedy of Macbeth. Yes, she thought, laying down her brush in extreme fatigue. I have had my vision. Lily in Virginia Woolf's To the Lighthouse. And soon now, we shall go out of the house and go into the convulsion of the world, out of history into history, and the awful responsibility of time. Jack Burton and Robert Penn Warren's All the King's Men. I'm thinking of Aurochs and Angels, The Secret of Durable Pigments, Prophetic Sonnets, The Refuge of Art. And this is the only immortality you and I may share, my Lolita. Humbert Humbert and Vladimir Nabokov's Lolita. Mediocrities everywhere, now and to come. I absolve you all. Amen. Salieri and Peter Schaeffer's play, Amadeus. It's old light, and there's not much of it, but it's enough to see by. Elaine and Margaret Atwood's Cat's Eye. It seems that destiny has taken a hand. Rick Blaine in Casablanca.